Come on.
A few minutes later, they broke into a clearing. Huge stumps here and there told him where trees had been felled. Several large tents were set up around the clearing. Someone had dug a large fire pit in the center and ringed it with stones. A small fire crackled in the pit. A coffee pot perched on a metal grate above the flames. To one side sat a large frying pan with some bacon and biscuits in it. The men who'd made this camp had been preparing a midday meal. They'd never have to worry about that again. They were all dead, their bodies scattered around the clearing. Frank's jaw tightened as he reined Stormy to a halt. His mouth was a grim line. He looked around the gore-splattered clearing and tried to figure out how many men had died here. He put the number at 6, although it was hard to be sure because they appeared to have been torn limb from limb. Frank had seen plenty of violent death in his life, but he wasn't sure he had ever come across anything like this before. He had heard stories about how grizzly bears could maul men until they barely looked human. As he gazed in horror around the clearing, his first thought was that a bear must have done this. But it would take a grizzly to wreak such destruction, and he didn't think they lived in this part of the country. There were black bears in California, but he doubted if one of those smaller bears could have killed 6 men. A black bear might have mauled 1 or 2 men, but those gunshots Frank had heard would have brought it down. The big cur nosed around the torn-up bodies.
Wolf, come away from there.
Still holding the Winchester, Frank swung down from the saddle and studied Stormy and Goldie. The horses were a mite skittish, but that was probably from the coppery smell of freshly spilled blood that filled the air.
They'd be spooked even more if they were picking up bear scent. And Wolf will be growling.
Wolf was curious about what had happened here, but the thick ruff of fur around his neck wasn't standing up as it would have been if he'd smelled a bear or some other immediate danger. Because of that, Frank knew that whatever had done this was gone. He walked over to take a closer look at the bodies. The men were still clad in blood-soaked clothing. Frank studied the boots that had metal caulks on their soles, the thick canvas trousers, and the woolen shirts, and he knew he was looking at loggers. The saws and axes and other gear scattered around the camp testified to that fact as well. He saw several pistols and a couple of rifles lying on the ground where the men had dropped them. The guns hadn't saved them. Somebody was coming. Frank swung around in time to see 4 men burst out of the woods, each of them carrying a long-handled, double-bitted axe. They stopped short and stared in shock at the horrible scene laid out before them. They were dressed the same as the dead men, with the addition of caps or narrow-brimmed hats. A couple wore holstered guns strapped high on their waists. After a moment, all 4 men slowly came forward into the clearing, gazing around at the corpses as if they couldn't believe what they were seeing. A broad-shouldered man with a bushy mustache that drooped over his mouth looked at Frank.
Mister, did you do this?
You really think one man could do this? I heard the shots and the screams and rode up to see what was going on. I imagine the same thing brought you fellas here. Did you know these men?
Yeah, we knew them. We were all part of the same crew.
And I'm sorry you lost your friends. You have any idea what might have happened?
The terror.
Yeah, the terror of the Redwoods.
What's that, some kind of animal?
It's not an animal, mister. It's a monster.
Just then, 3 men rode into the clearing. These newcomers were dressed very differently from the loggers. They wore range clothes and broad-brimmed Stetsons. They had gun belts strapped around their hips and thonged to their thighs, and they carried Winchesters as well. Frank recognized the sort of men they were. Gun throwers, hard cases, hombres much like himself. He faced the riders who had just entered the clearing. One of them gestured toward the bloody corpses.
By jingo! The terror did this, didn't it?
That's right, mister. You fellas are hunting a damn thing, aren't you?
Damned right we are. We're gonna collect that bounty.
Who's put out a bounty?
Haven't you heard about it, mister?
I just rode into these parts today.
Well, the terror's been around here for months now, scaring folks. When it started killing people, though, Mr. Chamberlain put out the word to be a big reward for whoever kills him.
Who's Chamberlain?
Rutherford Chamberlain, the timber baron. He owns the lease on these woods for miles around. It's his men who've been killed, so he said that he'd pay $10,000 for the terror's head.
Frank knew now why he had recognized Chamberlain's name. He had seen it on various documents his lawyers had shown him one time when he visited their offices in San Francisco. No one would think it to look at it, but Frank Morgan was one of the richest men in the country. He had inherited half of the far-flung business empire founded by his late wife, Vivian Browning. The Browning holdings included some logging interests. Frank had never cared about business, and money mattered to him only as long as he had enough to keep him in supplies, so he trusted his attorneys to take care of everything for him. It was possible that he owned stock in Chamberlain's company. It was equally possible that he and Chamberlain were competitors. Frank didn't know and didn't care.
By Jingo, I know who you are, fella. You're Frank Morgan.
And you're Jingo Reed.
You heard of me, have you?
Wait a minute. You mean that's the hombre they call the Drifter?
He sure is. I saw you gun down the McClatchy brothers in Flagstaff a few years ago, Morgan. You were mighty fast. But I reckon I'm faster.
Hey, Jingo, we need to get on the trail of that monster. I want to get that 10 grand reward.
I do too, but the varmint will wait. I got something just as big right here.
Don't do it, Jingo. I'm not looking for any trouble with you.
That's the way life is, Morgan. Trouble comes at you whether you're looking for it or not.
And with that, Reed clawed at the gun on his hip, his hand moving with blinding speed. Frank's Colt appeared in his hand as if by magic. Jingo had barely cleared leather before Frank's bullet smacked into his chest. Spooked by the shot, Reed's horse bucked and threw him off. He crashed down on the ground and lay in a limp sprawl, not moving.
Damn it! He done killed Jingo!
The man swung the barrel of his rifle toward Frank. With more time now, Frank didn't have to shoot to kill again. He broke the man's shoulder with a bullet instead. The man dropped his rifle and clutched at his wounded shoulder. Frank shifted his aim toward the third hard case, who quickly held up both hands in plain sight.
Don't shoot now, Morgan. I don't want any part of this.
That's a smart move. You boys should have gone after the terror while you had the chance. Now you got to tend to your friend and take Jingo to the undertaker.
All right to put my hands down?
Just keep him away from your guns.
The man dismounted and began helping his wounded companion climb out of the saddle.
I never saw a draw that slick in all my life. Is it true, mister? Are you really Frank Morgan?
That's my name.
No offense, Mr. Morgan, but I figured you were dead by now. I've been hearing stories about you since I was a kid.